Hello, Will, Kermit, Bessie, Greta. What I have here is I've written down a list of some of the more obvious Afrikaans words that I will try and read for you, and perhaps you could refer to the sheet that I provided. The Afrikaans language originated, of course, with the Dutch in 1642, who settled the Cape Town area when the Dutch were trying to get a trade going with India, and found that the Cape of Good Hope was indeed a fair cape and did provide a very good living. The Dutch subsequently found the need, along with the French Huguenots, to break ties with the continent, and as a result developed their own language, which has drawn strongly from the Dutch but has quite a few French influences, and you will see these in names like Graaf Renet and Retief and so on. The language itself is very Germanic in the sense that it does employ the that glottal fricative g a lot, which I think you may want to try and master to get an authentic sound. So without further ado, let's go through this list. Marius Bielefeld. Marius Bielefeld. Katrina. Katrina. Sterling Retief. Sterling Retief. Elsa, or in the term of affection, Elsie. Karoo. Karoo. Craddock. Craddock. Graaf Renet. Graaf Renet. Boss. Boss. Now next we have the English word for pastor, whereas the Americans say pastor, but you may want to read pastor or pasteur. Pasteur. Koos. Malchas. Koos. Malchas. Gertrude. Gertrude. Obviously from which we get the English Gertrude. Dominie. Dominie. Marie Biscuits. Marie Biscuits. Stephanus. Stephanus. Mrs. Van Heerden. Mrs. Van Heerden. Rechmaker. Rechmaker. Sneeuwberg. Sneeuwberg. Gamtoos. Gamtoos. Spitzkop. Spitzkop. Aasvoelkrans. Aasvoelkrans. Miss de Klerk. Miss de Klerk. Mrs. Nivoot. Mrs. Nivoot. Dominie Gerike. Dominie Gerike. Petrus Johannes Martinus. Petrus Johannes Martinus. Stephanus. Jacobus. Sterling Jerry Boot Mrs. Van Heerden. Sterling Jerry Boot Mrs. Van Heerden. Mr. Latergaan. Mr. Latergaan. Kloof. Kloof. Doek. Doek. I hope I've got all the words that may cause a problem. If not, I'll be glad to read them for you. And now a note for Kermit. Kermit, Will said that you needed something read in the Dutch accent to get some idea of the flavor. And I'm not too sure whether that meant that you wanted me to read something from the script, in which case I apologize for any... it kind of fills me with intrepidation to have to read from the text, because I'm afraid I don't want to appear like I'm giving line readings or something like that. So if you don't want me to do that, what I have done first is read a little paragraph from what I wrote to you in the letter, and then what follows is a piece from the text, and if you don't want to listen to that, then of course that'll be fine. Dear Kermit, what follows is a brief introduction into the world of Marius Bielefeld, which I hope may be of use to you. I have given to Susan Willis a series of transcripts produced by Judy Widdruff for the PBS Frontline series on the history of apartheid. It should answer any questions that you may have about the presence of the Afrikaner in Africa, but it may not supply enough information about Marius's particular view of the world. That world has been dictated to a large degree by the physical environment that he has chosen to be a part of. In the play, the desert is described as God without people. There it is, a stark, barren, harsh, and unforgiving world at first that will coat your beard and eyelashes white with a fine dust. It is a world that gives new meaning to our city notions of thirst. Parched, a cup of water can indeed be nectar of the gods. In the little villages and towns that have sprung up where there is water, the church, particularly the Dutch Reformed Church, is always the center of the town, with a steeple reaching up into the cloudless sky as a stern reminder that this town serves the God of our forefathers. There the faithful, the folk, will gather every Sunday, sitting in their Sunday best in their usual places, with well-worn Bibles that are read faithfully every evening meal, to sing three hymns and to listen to the Dominee deliver the word of God. There they will be reminded of the covenant God made with his people in a land so very similar to this one, and they will be exhorted to live out their lives in sobriety and submission to the Almighty, who has made a similar covenant with the Afrikaner people to carry the light of the ages into the deepest and darkest corners of black Africa. So they will leave, sometimes after a two-hour sermon, chastised, nourished, and encouraged to continue in the ways of their forefathers. Now I will read some of Marius' lines from Act 2. Feast your eyes on this, Miss Barlow. A genuine Sneerberg potato. A pinch of salt and you got a meal, and if you want to be extravagant, add a little butter and you indeed got a feast. We had a farmer from the Gamtoos Valley up here last week trying to sell us potatoes. Can you believe it? Did you see him, Ellen? He had his lorry parked in front of the post office. What is the English expression, Miss Barlow? Coals to where? Well, that's it. Well, in this case, it was very near to being an insult as well. We pride ourselves in these parts on knowing what a potato really is. And here you would have it. The apple of the earth, as the French would say. But I don't imagine that poor man will come again. Shame. I ended up feeling very sorry for him. Don't you people like potatoes, he asked me. What could I say? I didn't have the heart to tell him he'd wasted his time driving all this distance, that nobody come to the Sneerberg to sell potatoes. And then to make me feel really bad, He insisted on giving me a small sack of them before he drove off. I don't think he sold enough to cover the cost of his petrol back home. I also brought you a few beets and tomatoes. The beets have passed their best now, but if you pickle and bottle them, they'll be more than all right. Have you ever treated our young lady to a taste of that, Miss Helen? It's one of our local specialities. One thing I can assure you, ladies, is that these vegetables are as fresh as you're ever likely to get them. I dug them up myself this afternoon. It wasn't any bother at all. I've got more than enough for myself stored away in the pantry. Would have been a sin to leave them rot in the ground when somebody else could use them. At our age, we need fresh vegetables, Helen. Marie biscuits and tea are not a balanced diet. In the old days, Helen used to have a very fine vegetable garden of her own out there. But as you can see, the humble potato has been crowded out by other things. I don't think there's enough room out there now to grow a radish. Yes, the good Lord was very generous to us this past year. I don't really know that we deserve it, but our rains came just as we needed them. Not too much, not too little. Believe me, young lady, we are well experienced in both possibilities. Not so, Helen. Dry it certainly is, but not desolate. It might appear that to a townsman's eye, but indeed it did, as indeed it did to mine when we first came here. But that is because we're already deep into our autumn. It will be a good few months before we see rain again. What an interesting thought, God without mankind. I can't decide whether that's Catholic or Protestant. Would you know? And you judge it too harshly, Miss Barlow. It has got its gentle moments and moods as well. All the more precious because there are so few of them. We can't afford to take them for granted. As you can see, it feeds us. Can any man or woman ask for more than that from a little bit of earth he lives on? I was talking about simple gratitude, Miss Barlow. Wouldn't you say contentment is a more complicated state of mind? One that can be very easily disturbed, but grateful? Yes, our colored folk also have every reason to be. Ask them. Ask little Katrina, who visits Miss Helen so faithfully, if she and her baby have ever wanted for food, even when Kuas has spent all his wages on liquor. There are no hungry people, white or colored, in this village, Miss Barlow. Those of us who are more fortunate than others are well aware of the responsibilities that go with that good fortune. But I don't want to get into an argument. It's my world and Miss Helen's, and we can't expect an outsider to love or understand it as we do.
Hello, Greta. Will had mentioned that you were wondering how Elsa Barlow would speak. Elsa Barlow is English, obviously, and here's an important point to be made, is that Marius Bielefeld and Miss Helen are in a sense united by their language, in fact that they are both Afrikaner, and there is a very different sense of you being a foreigner in that environment. The fact that they speak English around you could be taken, although I don't think it's implied here at all, as that your Afrikaans is not good enough for them to freely speak in Afrikaans, so they prefer to speak in English, meaning that they are more versed in English than you are in Afrikaans. Of course, Fugard was writing this play for an English audience, so there are reasons why this text is in English. Nevertheless, I think that Miss Barlow, Elsa, coming from Cape Town, she would be bilingual, and the students she would teach, she probably would teach to a large degree in Afrikaans. So the words that she does have in Afrikaans, like kloof and doek, and I think she says Gertrude and Katrina, she would pronounce with a very solid Afrikaans accent. Nevertheless, her accent would be very similar to mine, in that it is an English derivative with an Afrikaans flavor. I will read a note on Miss Helen, which is in the front of the text. It was a drive into the Karoo to spend a holiday at a friend's farm, and the route I took, that took me for the first time through what had only been a name on the map until then, New Bethesda, a small village in what turned out to be an absolutely magnificent setting. As I drove through it, I couldn't help responding to it, because I'm actually born in that part of the world. As a matter of fact, I was born 15 miles away from New Bethesda in a place called Middleburg. Driving to my friend's farm, I was struck by its isolation and thought to myself, hell, this would be quite a nice place to have a house and escape from the city if ever I felt like getting away from the world. I mentioned this to my friend, who said, well, you know, the houses are dirt cheap in New Bethesda because there has been a move from the rural areas to the cities. You could pick up a house there very cheaply. So on the way back to Port Elizabeth, I in fact stopped and inquired and looked around and discovered that there were houses for sale very, very cheaply. I returned 3 months later with the express purpose of buying a house, which I still own. In the course of looking at various houses and getting to know a few of the locals, reference was made to a rather strange character who lived in the village. Her name was Helen Niemand, and the people were kind of apologetic about her because they regarded her as a little crazy. They said that her craziness came from the form of a rather silly statues and sculpture that she had made and had all around her house. I obviously couldn't resist the temptation of strolling in the direction of her house and seeing Miss Helen's Mecca for the first time. She was still alive at that point, but had become virtually a total recluse. So apart from seeing her in the distance once or twice and nodding at her when she was among her statues as I happened to be walking past, I never got to know her personally. About 2 years ago, I bought my house and started visiting the village regularly. Miss Helen committed suicide. Obviously, as a writer, I couldn't help responding to this very eccentric character in this strange little community, a community which was, in a sense, hostile to her life and her work because it was a derivation of what they considered to be the way of life that should be lived, and thinking there's a damn good story. Over the next few years, thoughts about Miss Helen occurred with some frequency in my notebooks. Thank you very much. I hope to be down April 28th for the read-through. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.